This is an interview with Vern Cook. This is tape 3, side 2.
Tom Mahoney observed about cynicism. He said, a cynic is a man with experience.
Gee. And now you feel that way?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that was a question of conflict of interest in there. And I'd say almost precisely the same point was involved in that case as was involved in... In my case, I was rejected at every turn, spent money, or stole Reeves, a lawyer from there, was assigned to oppose me, and yet they waited around because of his political connections. He came out and they allowed him his $25,000 fee. They figured out a way to do it.
So what was the basis of the case against you then?
They claimed, actually it was the other lawyer in this office, the position I took, which was right, is that I never represented this pretty young woman that was referred in to me by a friend. I represented the conservatorship estate, of which she was the conservator. And they claimed when I reported, which I think a lawyer should do, but you should never do this, you never report dishonest conservators, or let them steal away, you resign and let them keep stealing. That's the bar rule. So I reported this dishonest young woman, or I had the other lawyer, the young woman, Janet Kreft, who was here with me, report this fact that this conservator had received money that she wasn't accounting for. She kept it for herself. So Janet reported it to the judge, and the judge removed this woman and appointed another lawyer who was friendly to me as the personal representative to complete the administration of the estate. Then later, because of a lawyer who was, I think, was overcharging this estate, but I lost on every count, I didn't agree to that he should be paid this money he had coming. And it was getting to the point, the estate, I mean, there wasn't enough money in there to make any difference to anybody. I don't know why I stuck to it, but finally this woman, this dishonest conservator, filed a complaint against my associate, not against me, and which they then construed as being a conflict of interest. And on the basis of a complaint against my associate and not against me, they asked me and were suggesting that I had violated a conflict of interest statute by continuing to pursue an appeal, which we should have done in that case. It was such a mess. And so then we went before McLennan, who really, I had once been a friend of mine, and he really shafted me. Anyhow, it just got worse and worse. And so then they come down 3 weeks before the election, rule against me. They leak it to the press. It was a rotten deal, really. Barr leaked it to the press. They violated all their rules and leaked it to the press. And I made a mistake. In hindsight, I should have right away objected. I don't know if it would have made any difference. I should have right away said I demand a hearing. But then I might have been stuck with a lawsuit with the bar where I'd have put in $100,000 worth of time and might still have lost. And they might have, instead of this admonition, which is bad enough, hell, those bastards might have suspended me for 6 months or a year. it's a vicious, it really, I mean, I'm very biased, but I'm talking to another lawyer that heard of this case through this son of a bitch that stole Reeves, who was dishonest with him, I think, started representing him. He got involved in a thing where there it was a question of contacting the other side, and he told me over the phone, the reason I called him recently is because I got in a new case, and this guy said, well, this is my lawyer, so I call him up, and so talk about this case, but of course he immediately talks about his case where he got him to dismiss it, and he said, he's a Mormon too, he said he spent $70,000 worth of time fighting these bastards. So you see the penalty, and I went to this recent Bar Association meeting where it's so bad that they can't get the lawyers to attend, so they had to call a special one and change the rules so that there's no quorum anymore. Mm-hmm. It used to have 150, under 150, mind you, out of 10,000 lawyers, and they couldn't get 150 people at their business meeting. So they're talking about this process. And they say, we're going to give you 2 hours ethics credit.
Ethics credit?
We have to take special ethics. We have to learn ethics all the time. We have to have X number of hours of ethics for every 3 years. So a lot of lawyers have trouble getting. I'm way over qualified on all this because I go to a lot more of these meetings than, apparently, than a lot of them do. And so you're going to get an extra 2 hours of ethics credit by going to this. And they mentioned there that this the admonition, which at first supposedly was just be careful. Well, I didn't think it was just be careful. And I've noticed this in the decisions. In the last 2 years, the goddamn Supreme Court treats an admonition almost as bad as a prior record. It's like a drunk driver, diversion. You think they go into diversion, you think, well, I'm not getting convicted. No, but it's almost as bad as convicted. Now, where previously an admonition was supposedly a private reprimand, although they put it in the public record that they did it, now it counts against you if they accuse you of something else. And so now if you got accused of something else, instead of maybe getting you did some stupid thing of getting a 2 month suspension, now maybe they'll suspend you for a year because you had this admonition back there.
You have to watch your step then, don't you?
Oh, God. You know, Kurt Wolfer, a former member of the legislature, who got in trouble, actually, later because he was doing his security, smart guy, doing his security business on the floor of the legislature. He ended up with a federal sentence for something. He was a friend of Wally's, incidentally. Wally visited him in prison.
Wally Priestley.
Yeah. Or visited him. I don't know if he was in prison or not. But Kurt Wolfer, a baby face, he said, paranoia is a higher sense of awareness.
So I was wondering about your involvement in Democratic political activities.
When, of course, in 19, the year I was 21, which would have been in October of 1946, I remember that I registered Democratic. I wasn't very sure of myself, but I did. I wasn't a Republican, and I didn't have any other preference. And then,
was there any reason for your? I mean, was there? Well, why did you choose the Democratic Party?
In 46, I suppose it was because I didn't figure I was a Republican. So that, I guess that was the only primary alternative. Probably because I was an economic liberal and a social liberal, maybe. Partly. I don't know if I knew what it was at the time, but that's probably why. And so then when I entered law school, I was registered as a Democrat, and I remember when I was a senior in law school, we were interested in legislative reapportionment. There was a measure that got on that was on the ballot in 52, was adopted, very important amendment to the Constitution, which brought apportionment to the Oregon legislature based on population. And there was a meeting, someone called, probably Bill Linklater, who was active in the Young Democrats, called a meeting of the Young Democrats there at the University of Oregon. And I attended it, and Monroe Sweetland spoke there. And I thought about getting active, and then I figured, oh, like that woman I told you about in this drunk case, I haven't got time for this. So I just went to that one meeting, and then I put off my political career till I passed my bar exam. Then after that, one of the first things I did was to organize. I was a member of the Clackamas County Central Committee in '52. In 54, but then I'd started attending the Young Democratic meetings, and I guess I read about a meeting and probably in the Gresham Outlook, and I went to one and got acquainted with some other people my age, one of whom was Keith Burns, who later was a legislator and is a lobbyist now, and became friendly with him. And so in my absence, I had a woman that I was sweet on, was active in this organization. I'd known her at Reed. I don't know how she happened to get to that meeting. So they had a convention, which I got too late for some reason. And as I was arriving there, someone came by and told me, well, you have just been elected second vice president of the Young Democrats. I found out later it was all planned, that Marge had agreed to be elected first vice president if I would be elected second vice president, with the understanding that Keith Burns, who was elected president, was going to resign and go back east and go to law school, which he did. So all this came to pass. He resigned, she resigned, and I became the president. Now, before that, though, I had formed an organization, or had been led in the formation. Other people might argue about whether I did it, but I was the primary mover and shaker in forming a Democratic organization here in Gresham, East County, called the East County Democratic Forum. We had our organization meeting in the home of Edith Green, who at that time has a defeated candidate for Secretary of State. She later ran for Congress and won. We formed it in her house, and I was elected the first president, and we became very effective and influential in East County politics and also in the County Democratic Party. Yes. And at one time I was so involved in the County Democratic Party, and we were so effective that some people would refer to the East County delegation as Cook County. Times have changed. I decided to run at this last central committee meeting for the state central committee, and I didn't even win runner-up.
Really?
Yeah.
Why do you count? How do you count for that?
Well, there's a variety of things. I know enough about organization politics to know that they're not nearly as concerned as what you might have been, as how active you are and the close associations and friendships you have. But I think there's another thing, that the Democratic Party has been taken over by the affirmative action, diversity type of, maybe it used to be so-called extreme, you know, self-professed environmentalist. I mean, it's been taken over by this element that I'm not really that comfortable with. For the Multnomah County Democratic Central Committee, unless you are strongly favor giving preference to blacks and Indians and Hispanics and women or whatever, you're a reactionary, no good so and so. And of course, I don't believe in that, and I've expressed myself a few times, and so I'm in the wrong pew. And I think, you know, I voted Democratic in this last election, and I shocked my wife by telling her that there are some good things in this last election. And maybe if the Democrats don't lose their guts, which they probably will, since they're the ones that initiated it in the first place, Nixon and Bush are the fathers of affirmative action. Supposedly, one of the major forces in the defeat of Democrats for Congress was the white males who were fed up with this affirmative action, preferring people based on race and sex and so on. And maybe if it used to be, as the guys in the House, Jake Bennett, who was a member of the House, had been a member of the Senate, was back in the House, and then a bill would pass the House, it'd get over to the Senate and it'd be killed, and Jake Bennett used to say, thank God for the Senate.
And so less legislation is better legislation? Or?
Yeah, no legislation was better than what they had passed.
I see. Okay.
And here, I think, thank God for the Republicans. I mean, thank God for the conservatives. Conservative members of the Supreme Court, if they stick to their guns. But the problem is, just like Bush, they've got guilty consciences too about something they didn't do, so they'll probably double cross the white males too. it's terrible. No one has any principles. No matter at what level. Well, the old Thomas will be a man of principle, the black guy, you know. generally think he was terrible, but I think he's going to vote right on this one. There is, you know, there's a case before the Supreme Court.
There is?
Yeah, on contracts and so on. And maybe there's a couple of them. Yeah, the Supreme Court's going to get a bite at this apple. I think that's good, but I don't know what they'll do. But
is this the first time they'll have a chance to decide on that issue?
There have been other decisions where they've wobbled and waffled. And there was the Bakke decision, you may remember, was what they call a right decision. Then they've waffled on a couple of other cases. And they did a right on a case involving the fish people working in a packing plant in Alaska. And then Congress came in and changed that. That was a congressional act. It was not good, I don't think. And the Supreme Court has generally been okay on this. But again, as the late humorist, fictitious character Mr. Dooley once was quoted as saying, the judges follow the election returns. Mm-hmm. Now we'll see if they follow this election return. See if they will go the... I don't know this business of conservative and liberal. I don't know what conservative and liberal is. I suppose, and there's nothing wrong with being a conservative if you really are conserving something that's worth conserving. And I don't know if these people we label as conservatives are going to be conservative on this issue also. Mm-hmm. If they are conservative on this issue, I would say they are conserving what has become the principle of equal rights. That's the conservative position. The radical position is affirmative action that favors people based upon the color of their skin, unless they're whites, of course. And then, of course, it's immoral. But for everyone else, it's de rigueur. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. And then the Congress, of course, there are very few men or women of principle in Congress either. And now these Republicans, like the Gingriches of the world, they just as soon sell their grandmother as look at them, I think, if they can get elected to what they want. So we can't count on the Republicans, even though they were elected, largely, so some of the pundits say, because of this rebellion and anger of white males, primarily on this, about jobs. We can't count on the Republicans to maintain that position. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When Bush was in the president, that's one of the things he did. He should have vetoed a bill that came through. Instead of that, he agreed to it. He agreed to the affirmative action posture in his last year or two as president. So yeah, obviously, you know, he has no principle either, but or very little. I guess everybody has some principles. But
how involved were you with the changes that were going on in the Democratic Party in the early and mid-50s? You had mentioned Edith Green and Monroe Sweetland.
I was in the liberal wing of the Democratic Party, and I was very much involved in it. And I like to think I was one of the leaders in this movement towards a more liberal and more democratic Democratic Party. Dave Epps was the county chairman in the 50s. He had been a member of the CCF, the so-called socialist. Monroe Sweetland was in that too, the so-called socialist organization. It wasn't socialist, but it was like the Canadian CCF. They had a name for it. You probably know that.
Right.
Whatever it was. And Dave Epps and Sweetland had been buddies, and he was friendly to me. I'd been elected as president of the Young Democrats. And I was attending. He was there, and not Howard Morgan. Never got along with Howard Morgan. But I think I suggested to Dave Epps that we ought to have a state convention. And he thought it was a good idea to see if we could get these Democrats to vote like Democrats instead of like Republicans. So he got this passed by the... I spoke to that central committee, as a matter of fact, state central committee, in support of having a state Democratic convention. And they approved of it. I was then named to the committee. For some reason, they named Carney Bateson chairman of the committee to set it up, but I was on the committee. And Oregon had no previous experience with conventions, not for 75 years anyhow. No recent history of having political conventions.
Why is that?
I think it may have come with the direct primary. I suspect that with the direct primary, people just figured that this is the end of all those bad politics, and bad politics was convention politics. So now we got the direct primary. So they didn't have conventions for years and years and years and years, until I suggested it to Dave Epps, and he was the guy that sold it to the Central Committee, and we set up the State Democratic Convention, from which they've had conventions ever since. And the Republicans now have conventions and all this legislation. Well, it was my idea. And and the Young Democrats influenced the original rules that it was formed by.
What about the decision to have Edith Green run as a Democratic candidate?
I had nothing to do with that. Probably not what she asked me, but what happened, and if I remember correct, I was friendly with R.E. Polishadin in those early days of the 50s. His wife, he's dead now, his wife is Betty Shadin, who's fairly prominent in East County circles here. And I got to know, I think I probably met Edith Green. Poli decided to run for the legislature. It must have been in 54. And I was his friend, and I worked with him, and I'm almost certain that Edith Green ran for Secretary of State that same year and lost. Can't remember who beat her, but she lost. But she did well, but she lost.
Was that Mark Hatfield?
No, he wasn't elected Secretary of State yet. It was someone else.
That's right. He wouldn't have been elected until 56.
I think 56, yeah. Yeah, I think he was elected in 56. He was a senator before that.
Right.
Yeah. I remember writing a letter to him when he was a senator on the elections committee. He invited me to appear and testify, which I didn't. Why, I don't know. Huh. Maybe, I don't know why. But anyhow, should have. But Edith Green then was, I guess I did know her because that's where we formed our club, in her house. She had the Tall Furs Motel she and her husband owned.
Oh, really?
Down here on Division. You know where that is?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they owned that then. And that's where we had our first meeting of our Democratic Forum, which was finally killed by Ruth McFarland, the woman that defeated me in 1980. Anyhow, she just decided, she was a great friend of Ken Rinke. Ken Rinke's former county chairman here, and later a lobbyist.
Right.
And I'm sure that he was influential and encouraged her to run for Congress, probably. Now, I can't say that that's true, but my guess is that he did. It would have been understandable and reasonable. It was a reasonable thing. And she ran, and I was still living in Clackamas County then, so I can't say that I voted for her. I was very active in politics here. I did establish my residence here in 56, so I could run for the legislature here. And I ran for the legislature from Multnomah County. But at that time I was active here, but I hadn't moved here yet. I was still a resident of Clackamas County, but I was active in Multnomah County. So I knew her.
There was some thought that Monroe Sweetland might want to run for Congress instead of her.
Was there? I vaguely remember that may have been, well, they never did get along very well. She was undoubtedly Morgan's candidate. Morgan claimed Mr. Monroe Sweetland, and he was national committee man looking for a candidate, looked in the mirror and chose himself. That was one of Morgan's cracks that was repeated. They were not, well, you mentioned how they got together at this thing as old enemies and talked, but now I remember she ran, and I remember she wasn't a friend of mine later. You know, the strangest things, I was courting my wife then, and we decided to have a New Year's party, and we decided to have it at Edith Green's house. And we had a lot of old Democrats and so on, and they were playing games like bingo and so on. Well, I was courting my wife, and I didn't really want to spend New Year's Eve sitting in the parlor with a bunch of old codgers. And we'd previously arranged to meet with Beryl's sister and her husband at a club somewhere. So I excused myself and left, and I heard later that Edith was very offended.
That you left?
That I left. And we weren't close after that. She was never a friend after that. She took offense at that.
Interesting how people can have a very particular idea about how things should happen.
Yeah.
So, in terms of the other people in the involved in the early the changes of the early Democratic Party and the new changes, Neuberger, Green, to some extent Bob Straub, Keith Skelton, some of these other. What was your place? You were the president of the Young Democrats.
I was president of the Young Democrats, and I was friendly with and supported Dick Neuberger in his uh-huh. campaign for the Senate. Uh-huh. I worked. I was involved in a tour, as I recall. I think that was he had a tour where Al Ullman and Dick Neuberger,
right,
a group of us made a tour over into Eastern Oregon, and I was involved in this tour.
I've heard about that.
Yeah, and I was an admirer of Dick Neuberger and another co-admirer who was then a friend. I don't know how we no longer really particular friends. Mike Katz, who's been the PUC commissioner, was very active in the Young Democrats then. And we, when he was elected, I was at his election night party. I was there the night that the morning actually at night. We never went to bed, but if you'd gone to bed, you would have gone to bed thinking he'd lost, and you woke up the next day, he'd won by about 2,000 votes.
Hmm.
And I remember Helen Nichols, who now works for the TriMet Union. Helen Nichols, and she's still Nichols, never got married, I guess. Hmm. Ron Heinz is her boss. Hmm. I remember a big picture was run nationally as Helen embraces Neuberger as he wins in 54 in the old Roosevelt Hotel. I was there. And so he had a thank you dinner, and I was invited. So he was always friendly to me. And at a point, he had to choose, in a way, between Neuberger and Morris, because they became enemies later, and I was more in the Neuberger faction. Mm-hmm. Actually, though, with vis-a-vis Green, when Neuberger died, the question was, would the successor, would it be Maureen Neuberger or Edith Green? Well, Maureen outbluffed her or something. Maureen filed, and then Edith got cold feet and didn't challenge her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was very close.
Yes, sure. I've heard. Were you part of that decision-making process?
In a way, probably. I remember being, I remember Mike and I were at a meeting, maybe a Young Democratic meeting in a restaurant, when we got the news that Neuberger was dying or dead. Came in over the television or radio. So we were immediately, I'm sure that I was involved in a sense in that. How much, I don't know, but I'm sure I was involved.
Wasn't Hall Lusk appointed to
Fill the vacancy?
To fill the vacancy.
Yeah. Yeah. And Maureen was elected.
Mm-hmm.
And stayed as long as she wanted. And then when she didn't run for re-election, then Hatfield ran.
Right.
And won.